Are you a business owner looking for real advice and input? You're in the right place. From concept to launch to growth, funding, and beyond. Welcome to Startup Hustle with your hosts. One once sold a business for $150 million. The other, the author of Million Dollar Bedroom. Here are your hosts of Startup Hustle, Matt DeCourcy and Matt Watson.
And we're back. Another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here with Matt Watson. Hi, Matt.
What's going on, man?
Trying to figure out how to move stuff.
Like the Super Bowl trophy?
Maybe. And, you know, the logistics behind moving a Super Bowl trophy are probably pretty difficult. Now, I've got someone here today that I think can help us with that. And with us today, we've got Jeff Auslander from Dynamic Logistics. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Matt.
And we'll just get this out of the way. I've known Jeff for a long time.
Oh, this is good.
We
want stories
at one of the.
I've got stories too. We can share.
Oh, I got stories on him as well.
Yeah, we can share.
Now we're not going to do that.
They're all PG. Right?
This seems like a great time.
No, they're not all PG. Probably. So Jeff and I went to. Jeff went to one of the five colleges I dropped out of with me, and we were in the Sigma Phi Epsilon house together for a very brief amount of time. Is that true?
Semester.
Yeah, that's as long as I made it.
For a couple
it was
hours.
A heck of a semester.
It was.
We made it 2 hours for the party and they kicked you out.
Well, no, it was a heck of a semester, which is why my dad was like, I think you need to get a job for a while, son. So now, Jeff, you're the CEO of Dynamic Logistics, which here locally has been one of Kansas City's fastest growing companies, and you continue to crush it. As we get into the episode, which, by the way, is brought to you by Fullscale.io, which can help you build a software team quickly and affordably, why don't you give everyone a background about what it is that you guys do, and then we'll talk about the good, the bad, the ugly related to that.
Yeah, so for our space, people would call us a third-party logistics company or 3PL or a logistics service provider, LSP. Those don't sound very fun, but what that basically entails is that companies will outsource their logistics management, or just the way that we intend the company to be presented and marketed. They'll go on our software platform to run their logistics on, and then we will provide services, reporting, high-end visibility that, strangely, in our industry, nobody has.
So what's an example of that, like an example customer or use case?
Yeah, so we've got a customer that does the soups for Panera and for Kirkland. So if you go to a Costco, any soup you're going to get there is going to be made by this company. They're based up in Massachusetts. They had been doing transportation the way that all of our customers basically did, and we're 80% of the customer base is right now. Email, Excel, Big Chief tablets. Let's run our transportation that way. And, you know, for someone who's spending $20, $25 million a year in freight spend.
That sounds kind of old school.
So
yeah, it's
so
a little
this
archaic.
Vendor, this company you're talking about, do they have their own trucks and all of that? Or they're still relying on third parties to actually move stuff for them?
I would say probably a third of our customers will have some sort of fleet, but it's minute. You know, a company like that's going to ship about 300 loads a week, full truckload around the country. So if they've got a fleet, it may be a 30 loads of those that are local to that Massachusetts area. The rest of it that goes far away, they're going to use.
So their software helps them like order and monitor where all those things are moving around.
Yeah, I can give you the quick and dirty on the process.
Oh, I'm excited.
Well, hang on. So one of the things, though, is like you talk about the places that they need to be delivered to. Our COO, Daryl Blackburn, his family used to own a transportation company, and they would help deliver parts to like Ford.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is if you don't have X part there by a specific time, not good. Could shut down the whole assembly line. Yeah. By the way, and before you get into that whole process, and you know, as a listener, I like it when you're interactive, I want you to go to shipdlx.com and you have a little bit of reference to talk about why Mr. Auslander is going to get a little more into the dirty details. Take it away, Jeff.
Like the promo. Thank you.
Yeah.
So basically, I'm going to try in 1 minute or less tell you the life cycle of a transportation load that our customers experience with our platform. Almost every shipper or manufacturer has got to move their freight, right? and to some degree get it into their facility raw so they can make it and then produce it out to the market. They're going to run those sales orders, product orders through an ERP system. So you've heard of the ERP systems, whether it's Sage or SAP or the Microsoft suite of products. We then hook our software into that ERP system. So when the order goes in for, let's say, 40,000 pounds of soup to go to a Panera location in Kansas City from the Boston area, the system then, via the integration, grabs that order out of that ERP because we integrate with it, and it plans that load the most intelligent way possible to reduce miles and max out the truck. So what that means is basically if a truck goes down the road two-thirds full, it's like an empty airplane that has two-thirds less seats on it. So in a roundabout way. So the system's going to intelligently take that group of, let's say in that week, 600 orders for soup, and it could be 1 million pounds of soup. And it's going to basically say, this is the most intelligent way to ship it. Most cost, and it'll actually predict out the savings versus if we would have shipped it a different way versus.
No. It says no soup for you. 2 weeks.
Yes.
That's what it says every time.
You know, Costanza could be involved in this if you want us to. So,
wow.
So then from there, it then assigns the best carrier.
Yeah.
Based on rate or performance. We track all that. And then you can track the truck all the way down the road. This all sounds like stuff that should have been around for the last 30 years, but it has not. The industry is behind all the other departments.
This sounds like to me? It sounds totally boring as fuck, and it's awesome.
Yeah, no,
it's the best kind of business. These are the best kind of niche businesses, right? It's a simple product, simple solution, and everybody needs it, right? Everybody wants to create all these like crazy, inventive, weird, high tech things.
But in the real world,
shit like this needs to be solved. People need soup, man.
I'm sitting here thinking everything that you touched came to you on a truck.
Yeah.
Good for you for actually figuring this out.
I think it's like 8 or 9% of the gross domestic product is transportation. Wow. And Matt knows this because we went to school together. I wasn't a transportation major. I was a journalism major at KU.
These are my favorite kind of businesses.
Yeah. So I'm like,
solving real world problems.
How did I get into this? But I did see a need for a very large industry. And I'm not the only one, but there's a group of us that gravitate towards if technology can solve what we just described. Even if it's 30 years behind the curve of what the accounting department gets or what the sales department gets with like a Salesforce.com or you name it, why doesn't transportation have that? If every company's sunk cost is generally 5 to 10% of their revenues have to go to move their product around.
So is everything you do software related?
No, it's software and expertise and services and operations.
I mean, you guys aren't moving stuff.
Yeah, we're moving for our – I mean, so our customers –
You guys have trucks yourself?
No.
No, so you don't do that. So you just provide software.
Provide software, and then a lot of our clients want us to become their shipping department.
So they'll
outsource the whole thing.
Coordination.
You sort of have like a call center or whatever you would call it, a group of people that help them logistically.
Account managers that run those accounts.
So how are we going to get the Super Bowl trophy back to Kansas City?
Well, you know,
how would that work? So if we wanted to transport that and we're planning on that, and by the way, at the time of the recording, we have not played the Super Bowl yet. That's this weekend. Yeah. So hopefully we don't look back at this and feel that we're the ones that jinxed it. But so let's just say that I have that particular need. Now that on that one-off basis is not what your company deals with.
No, that's
you guys are a framework that regular and frequent and volume type clients use, right?
Yeah. All of their freight, it's in our contracts, will go through our system. Generally, we do a couple year, multi-year contract that they commit to on that. So you're basically picking up everything that comes out of their facilities. And some of our customers have one facility, some have 15, depends on the size of the company.
Yeah.
So as far as the Super Bowl trophy is concerned, let's have a little fun here, right?
I'm willing to bring it back myself.
Here's how I would do it. Get Mahomes with the trophy. You know, 5 or 6 of the best people in my company ride back with him in a limousine truck and maybe bring Kelsey along for the fun.
What about a jet?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, we'll
just fuel up.
Or we could do an air shipment, which would be a jet. Let's do that instead.
Yeah, that sounds better and faster.
Well, but it'd be fun to hang out with them for 12
I think
hours.
The Hunts own a few jets.
Yeah. Just a couple.
They'll take care of it.
Yeah. It sounds like we've got a plan. So, you know, you mentioned having full visibility. Is that as precise as like tracking the shipment, like knowing that it's in Hoboken or wherever, or It is.
Yeah. So what the software allows is really three ways to track the truck. And I'm trying to keep this less boring because
I'm not saying you're boring. I'm just like, what you do is sort of like,
guys,
infrastructure. People need this shit, but it's not sexy.
But it's important.
But let's cut through the bullshit.
And welcome to Startup Hustle, where we'll call your business boring.
No.
Listen.
Shipping is boring. Guys. I'm being honest.
Yeah. What did you want to do when you grew up?
But it's super important.
Did you want to be in trucking or logistics?
No.
I did. I didn't qualify.
Yeah, I remember that semester I had with Matt. He was like, man, I really just want to drive a truck all day. So,
by the way, at that point, I thought that I could possibly be a sociology major. You talk about journalism, and I was like, maybe I want to do something.
Well, that sounds boring.
I found it to be fascinating, but then I was like, maybe I should do something where I make some money.
Yeah.
But they can track that load three different ways. Either we hook into the driver's cell phone, or they've got a what's called an ELD block. It's a tracker that keeps track of their hours so that they don't drive the truck when they're sleepy, for lack of a better term. Or we work with their dispatcher to update the system more manually. Or we do an EDI feed into their software. So your less than truckload shippers, your Old Dominions, your Estes's, FedExes, they all have EDI capability. So literally, we can track that truck every time it gets pinged by their system as to where it is, and it timestamps it in the system. So people know where their stuff's at. And we can set the software up to where something looks like it's going to be late, because there's all these algorithms that can kind of calculate, this one might be late to Walmart, which, by the way, is a no-no.
Yeah, yeah.
Walmart doesn't like that.
Well, I don't think anybody likes.
No,
that.
But they're really gonna ding you for it pretty good. So
no, you say ding, and that was a real thing. So, and we almost could have brought Daryl in to sit in on this episode, because he had a lot of experience and in their family's business. You know, like I said, it was largely parts that went from. This was in Indianapolis, so a lot of the automakers have parts manufacturers and different stuff all around Detroit. And the thing is like, if those parts don't arrive and it results in them stopping the assembly line at Ford, you're fucking done.
Big problem.
I mean, I'm talking like the contracts would be, I mean, these are penalties that would just, you're done. You're out of business.
What's crazy in this world we have now, everything is just in time and everything. Like, nobody stockpiles a bunch of stuff in a warehouse anymore.
Not really.
For anything. And so the trucking industry is like the, you know, and shipping, you know, all the types of transportation, right, are so critical to like that just-in-time delivery of everything. Yeah. Like, everything's got to move like a well-oiled machine and get there just at the right time.
I like the analogy you used of an airplane that was only two-thirds full.
Right.
And you think about that and like I think people don't really realize that these 18-wheeler trucks that you see get like 2 miles to the gallon.
Right.
I mean, maybe, right? Maybe. So the thing is if you're not maximizing those loads and you end up running an extra one once a week but scale it up to like massive people. And now all of a sudden you're talking about thousands of loads that don't make any sense. I mean, I can imagine that the cost effectiveness of that can really destroy your bottom line. Is that?
Yeah. Let me give you an example that, again, in my opinion, will be kind of boring, but it'll kind of give a visual to listeners.
Jeff, there is no episode of Startup Hustle that I've found more fascinating so far than this one.
Oh no, yeah, this is great.
So literally, let's talk about a beef customer, right?
Oh, we like beef. Yeah,
perfect. Beef. Everybody
here
likes.
Here comes the barbecue. Everybody, yes.
Everybody likes steak. Everybody likes hamburgers. You know, you name it.
We have received free beef here.
Yes.
So in the old days, or really still the current days till they go on our platform, the transportation manager would get a bunch of printed out orders from Costco, TGI Fridays, Culver's, and they would put those out on a piece of 8.5 by 11 over a table about this big, you know, a 10 by 5 table. And they would literally put the orders together to build loads manually. The human error and effort that goes into that, the results of it and goes into that, is that really optimal?
Stacking paper.
Yes. And so then they would try and max out the truck, which means they try to get as much weight on that truck as possible, yet still be able to do it within the parameters to hit delivery times at the different places that truck's going.
Yep.
Software does that in split seconds.
Yeah, no doubt.
And then
it shows up to work every day.
And so instead of a regular full truckload of beef's going to max out probably at 40 or 41,000 pounds. So you want it as heavy as possible within the parameters to hit the Walmart delivery, the Costco delivery, and the Friday's deliveries, right? So the software does that. And it even spits out how much money you saved versus, you know, we invest a lot in BI reporting. So okay. we will come back at the end of the week or the end of the month, and the client will review with us on our dashboard. They can pop whenever they want. The way I used to ship it, I averaged 34,000 pounds per shipment. Now I'm averaging 40,200 pounds. That's 6,000 pounds. That's is a big, huge yeah. difference. It could be millions of dollars.
20%.
It could be $1 million in savings for a $20 million shipper per year.
Wow.
Just by having the system intelligently do it. And by the way, the people that were doing all the papers on the table 5 minutes before 5 minutes ago when I mentioned that, they have other things to do. So not only do they not want to do that, they're not going to be accurate at it because they're also in charge of the warehouse. They're also in charge of working with customer service. They're also in charge of working with sales to get these orders. So we take all that off their shoulders. It's extremely accurate. And then we're held accountable because our reporting reports back on it to say, this is what it did for you.
So there's one thing that the software can't predict, and that's that. So anytime I do a business plan or a, or any type of projection, I literally put a line in there that says, oh shit. And what it, and people have, that I've helped plan stuff, they're like, well, what is this? I'm like, that's for, oh shit, I didn't think about that. I didn't, it's for all the stuff you forgot. So in your case, in the case of shipping, there's a ton of oh shit items.
Oh yeah.
Like, I mean, the truck could break down, you could, it could wreck, there could be snow, there could be a number of different things. How do you help people handle that part? Like, is some of that just a matter of notifying, hey, the soup's going to be late?
Yeah. So it's two pronged. First prong is a system catches it. So what this system can do is it'll predict the average mile per hour that the truck's going to drive based on just what the industry is. And generally the number is 50 miles an hour because they're going to stop here and there, even though they're going 65 half the time. It's so then it can predict when that truck would arrive based on when it, because it'll timestamp it when it picks up. It's also going to check the driver's hours. Does the driver have enough hours to make that delivery in a you know, a straight move without stopping?
Well, and let's clarify that, because the truck drivers can only drive so much. It's like an airline pilot, right?
Yeah. Otherwise, they get dinged. So it's going to calculate all that and then predict out. And then as that truck drives down the road via our tracking I talked about earlier, it'll start to notice, uh-oh, we got 100 loads and these three are behind. There's ice in Minnesota. This driver's out of hours. And this other guy hit traffic. So it'll actually send what's called a notification to our team and to their team saying, problem load, let's dig in, get ahead of it with the customer, try and rearrange an appointment. Because sometimes that's all you got to do is call these deliveries and say, hey, I can't make four. Could I move it to six for my delivery? And they won't get dinged for being late if that happens.
And is some of that also about the recipient having the correct people there to unload the truck? I mean, is that the part of why that notification matters, or is it just to help them? Like, I need soup, or say I need, okay, how about I need the stuff to make the soup?
Right.
Is that so you don't have 100 people there at the soup factory 2 hours prior to actually having the stuff you need, or just, I mean, all of that?
It's all that, because first of all, you don't want downtime, because here's what happens. Yeah. Yeah. You get one shipment late. It screws up the rest of the day because it was supposed to be there at four and they didn't know that it wasn't going to, if they know it's going to be late ahead of time, they can then rearrange another delivery that's maybe showed up early and say, okay, we'll take this guy now instead of the guy that was going to be here at four.
I got a good analogy for you. You can't pick up the Super Bowl trophy until after the Super Bowl is over. So timing is important.
Ah,
yeah. See,
and then the clouds part.
Yeah.
And shine the light on the Super Bowl.
Well, and you can't pick it up after if Kelsey already runs off with it and takes it to some nightclub in South Beach. So you got to be on time to pick up that trophy. Sure.
Now that's where you're going to go ahead, and that's where the notification is going to say, "Hey, the delivery might be late." So, you know, with all that, there's so much. These are the things. You know, Matt, you kind of hinted on the. You say, oh, the boring part, but this is the skeleton of like so many parts of business.
It's the infrastructure of so much of
the support structure. And if that goes to shit, you got a whole lot of different problems.
How many of us order stuff on Amazon every day? If Amazon wasn't really good at this, none of us would get our Amazon Prime stuff a day or 2 days later.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah. Sure.
How critical it is to so many things about our infrastructure and how many things are manufactured, things we buy online, all this stuff relies on all this. And it's kind of boring infrastructure stuff, but it's super critical to our entire economy.
Yeah, the funny part is that it's the most boring things that if they go wrong, they create things that are not boring, like everyone being pissed off about something. I mean, we did
I ordered you a bidet for your birthday, and if it doesn't show up on time, then you're going to be really upset.
A rough week.
Yeah.
especially the potluck I saw earlier.
Oh, Matt's digging into jokes from our trips to the Philippines.
Oh, great.
Like when I went to his engagement party and I came out and I was like, so there's a first time for everything. And I just washed my butt with a hose. So, yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah. You know, I feel that it contributes. Hey, we try to be transparent with our experiences in life. Now, Jeff.
We were talking about loads. And yeah.
Oh, God. All right. So, Jeff, you and I were catching up, and it's good to see you, man. I'm excited that you're doing so well. And, you know, you're up to 76 employees. You said 70, wow. 70 of them are here locally. There's a few in California or Colorado. Yeah.
Can we talk about that for a second?
Sure.
So there are a lot of logistic, transportation, mm-hmm. like software services, trucking companies, all of these things in Kansas City. We have railroads here.
Yeah, but why?
All of it, right?
Because we're in the middle.
And how big of a deal is that to you and your company? Like the advantage of being in Kansas City, is that a strategic advantage to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's twofold. It's a, like Matt said, it's where it's located. That's very important. I also believe that the Kansas Cityan is a different breed of cat than most cities. I mean, the people here are hardworking. They're humble. And they're also, we try to find competitors. So it's location, and it's also kind of the kind of people we're able to get. As far as Kansas City being a hub, it's good to find talent that's in a bad culture. And our culture, I mean, we talk about the awards we won last year for growth, but the most important award we got is we got also voted best place to work in Kansas City by the Journal.
Very nice.
And so that means that we're having success.
Congrats, man. And thanks for doing that for people in general. Absolutely. Like at Full Scale, that's such an important thing to us.
Right.
Is because, you know, if you don't, you're never going to attract the best people possible if you don't have one of, if not the best place to work.
Right.
Because otherwise you're giving people an easy out for why they want to go somewhere else. And it's really hard to measure on some days, but the amount of loyalty that you get from your staff, from paying them well, treating them well, letting them be heard, expressing your appreciation for the fact that, like, when I go and talk to 200 of our employees in the Philippines, I'll ask a question. I'll be like, how many of you work for me? And a bunch of them will raise their hands. I'll say, you can put your hands down because you're wrong. I work for you. And, you know, and then explain to them why, because I do work for them. It's my job to find the best clients, to look out for their best interests and stuff like that. And those things go a long way, right?
Servant leader.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, we echo that quite a bit around here. At the end of the day, if I don't do it that way, what you just described, where we work for them, they're not going to feel empowered. That's a big deal. Being empowered.
Well, and that's another thing too, is like letting, like you say, empowering people say, hey, look, I hired you for a reason. Do your job. You're good. Make decisions.
Yeah. And what we are very transparent about at our company is everyone knows the score every day. I'll get into it in a second, but
Matt's a big on that one.
Yeah. So we are abundantly communicative with our employees as to how the company's doing. I mean, every day by 8:30 or 9, an email goes out with exactly how the company performed the day before. And we manage our business, unlike a lot of our competition or just anybody in general. We don't look at quarters and years and months. We manage our business on a weekly performance basis. So we have 52 games a year, and we're trying to win all 52 of those.
I like it.
Let's go.
And
I like that a lot.
And we talk about entrepreneurs, talk about starting up. I remember we had 3 employees, and you're burning cash with a fire hose or with a blowtorch because, you know, you don't really know the score. You don't really know what your numbers are. And the one thing we did was actually 3 years ago this month, we started doing the daily report, and I actually do it myself. I dig into all of our systems. I pop it out. I send it to everyone, give a little commentary on it, almost like a play-by-play or whatever. And if I don't get that thing out by 9 o'clock now, because we have a ton of competitors, I start getting IMs. Where the hell's the freaking report? Hey, Jeff, where's the report? I want to see where we're at. So it's that minute, you know, we always say we want to manage our business by minutes and hours and or hours and days, not weeks and months. And that has created a culture of, really daily competition, which has driven the numbers up. I think that is one of the biggest contributors to why we're growing is that it's not, oh, we got the rest of the month to figure this out. No, no.
It kind of reminded me of, like, if you've seen the movie Castaway in the very beginning where Tom Hanks is, you know, he works for FedEx. And, you know, he's like, you know, ships himself a clock and it's way late. And, you know, he's talking, he's like, hey, you know, this isn't how this works. Right. Like, you know, if we say this is an overnight delivery, it needs to get there overnight, not 3 days later. And who knows, you know, and the downstream effect of so much of that stuff is that if that's late, something else is late. And, like, I mean, it's a daisy chain of chaos. All right. So before we hit record, Jeff and I were talking about the reality of being an entrepreneur. And you said something that is, well, it's not for the faint of heart. Right?
Yeah.
And that's true. I think I'd like to talk about that for a few minutes because, you know, on Startup Hustle, we're pretty committed to being transparent about the reality of what it's like being an entrepreneur. Now, before we do that, once again, go to shipdlx.com so you can learn more about Jeff's business. If you want to see us on our YouTube channel, you can do that. We all look great today.
Oh, yeah.
So make sure.
I have glorious Baby Yoda.
Yes, Baby Mahomes. Yoda dressed like Patrick Mahomes, and I did remember for the first time this season to wear red on Friday. Hey, I saved it for the best time. But yeah, so Jeff, what are some of the things that when it comes to being an entrepreneur, now your business has grown quickly, that presents a whole different set of shit. And then sometimes, like you said, in that beginning phase is when you feel like you're like, here's money, let's just light it on fire. Like, what are some things what can you share with us about that whole process? And just, I mean, feel free to be as transparent about wins, losses, anything that comes to mind.
So on a macro description of the process of the 4 years, the first probably 2 years, hardest thing I've ever done in my life and scariest and hell. I mean, there's no better way to describe it.
What? Why?
Because you go from being an executive at a company, making good money and life is pretty easy. 401k is looking good. And then something happens to where maybe that's not as attractive anymore. And, someone gives you an opportunity to go on your own. I'd never been an entrepreneur. And, my wife looked at me and she goes, well, all you ever do is bitch about your bosses. It's all you ever do about how they do this wrong or that wrong. Or, you know, if you would do it differently, you do it this way. She's like, you need to do this. People are trying to get you to do this. You need to do it. So she was behind me 100%. That said, when you start up, your income's gone for the most part. You got to start it from scratch. So one thing, just a little anecdote, I didn't look at my bank account for 3 years. I just looked at my wife's face to see where it was at. So
I've gone through phases where I don't look at my bank account because it's been fucking depressing.
Yeah.
For that reason. Yeah.
Yeah. And the tears. And I mean, there were tears sometimes from her. And I would say, well, why don't I just go back and work for somebody? And she basically told me, fuck you. You're not doing that.
Yeah.
She's like,
I like her.
My wife's done that several times.
And my wife is like totally risk averse. But I think she knew that we were in this and she was in it. And she knew the only way I would really be happy is if I did my own thing and got to basically manage my own fantasy football team. But it's a business now, and I get to call the shots. The process, I mean, here's the deal. I'm a sales guy. My whole life I've been a director or vice president of sales.
Amen.
And so sales guys, what do they drive? Top line, right? So everyone just thinks that we're these top line maniacs that want to spend expenses and fly to Vegas and dine clients. Yep. And have no regard for the bottom line.
You need to do all that stuff, Matt.
And if you were to ask my employees, especially the ones that are at the director level above, I have a reputation of being cheap now because now I'm in charge of the bottom line. And learning that process for me was difficult for me to do. But once I figured it out, and I think the big thing was communicating to the employees, like, we're not healthy right now.
Yeah.
Okay. So if but you guys are all bought in on this thing. You're one of, at the time, 15 or 10 employees. And they all pooled together, the ones that became really our directors now and our vice presidents now, and said, screw that, we're not losing. And I don't want to get off path here, but dude, the one thing you got to find, you've got to find competitors. End of story. Find people that want to compete. Sorry, pound on the table. I get pretty passionate about it. But, you know, my
that was Watson, yeah. By the way.
One of my partners played college football at Northwest Missouri State. We've got guys that played basketball D2. We've got girls that played soccer D3. And we tend to like the people that didn't play D1 because they feel slighted. They got a chip on their shoulder. So
that's me. I didn't play D1.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I played intramurals with Matt. So
we won a championship.
We had a good softball team.
We won the softball championship at Kansas University. And I had one of the hits that helped deliver
that. You were playing girls softball?
No, it was
we were playing a fifth grade team from Lawrence Middle
School. Yeah, but we won.
But
we established a winning culture early, Watson. Yeah. This is in the early 90s, man.
It's like, that, right. is it Billy Madison where he's playing dodgeball with little kids?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty close.
It's pretty close to what we were doing. I think it's really important. People, there's a lot of ingredients that go into the success of it. And you guys know this because you've done it. You're kind of unconscious almost the whole time it's happening. You don't really know exactly. Like, to me, it's like we had this success and people ask me, how'd you do it? And I'm like, God, I don't really know, but I do know once I start to think about it. And I think being communicative with your people so they know exactly how healthy the company is, people take that stuff personally.
They want job security and they want to know if you're winning or losing.
But I think that level of transparency, like you said, hey, we're not healthy right now. If you have the right people around you, like much like they did with you, they're going to rally. Yeah. They're going to say, fuck that. We're not going to lose.
How do I help?
Or if we are, I'm going to make sure that, okay, here's the thing, is you're not going to win every battle. But dude, if you come out of it and you're like, you know what? I did what I could do. And I didn't, you know, I just showed up and I fought, then I can live with myself for not always succeeding. That's the way life goes. It's the times when I'm like, dude, I could have really done more there or tried or like just done something different. And I'm not a big advocate of living life looking in the rearview mirror because, you know, you can't get any of those moments back. But, you know, and sometimes as a leader as well, you have the best approach is saying, hey, everybody, I fucked this up. And I need help. I'm taking the L here.
They can't help unless you tell them you need help.
Yeah. And with that, I want to avoid doing that again. And this is where I'm planning on improving to help all of you help me.
Yep.
Or help us or help our clients. Or I don't know, dude. And speaking of when, didn't I see you fight Bob Barker once? Wasn't that? Whoa, that wasn't Billy Madison.
Happy Gilmore.
Dang it. Yeah. We did that.
So let me give you a little story here because it goes to exactly what you said.
By the way, on a side note, my course load at KU consisted of nearly all sports.
Oh my God.
And I still failed.
Wow.
I took tennis, bowling, golf, officiating softball.
You paid for this shit?
My dad did.
Well, the thing is, he didn't show up to class. He was in his room.
You still have student loans for paying for that?
Probably had fat Nat on tap in his room.
I didn't have student loans, but anyway. Yeah, I got a 0.7 GPA. It was bad.
F+.
I know. Anyway, not proud of that. But
does that mean you got 1 D and the rest?
No, I think I probably got, I don't know, dude. It was bad. Do as I say, not as I do.
How do you fail at bowling?
You don't go.
We'll talk about that later.
You don't go. You don't go. Yeah.
I mean, they put the bumpers up for you and everything.
You just don't go. I wouldn't have known.
Well, he's got to use his feet to get to that class.
That's the problem. Yeah, that was the problem. Anyway, back to you, Jeff.
So to that point, I mean, and really proud of this story, not to get all sentimental because we're having fun here, right? But you have to have that short memory.
Yep.
In fact, I'd say no memory.
Yeah.
We're not perfect. You know, we're growing like crazy, but we've had an unbelievable amount of bad luck along the way. And yet, like you said, we just keep getting off the mat. Like the whole Rocky speech in one of his movies, got to keep moving forward, keep moving forward. And there was a customer we lost that we did great things for, but just they basically decided to take the system in-house and did it on a whim, didn't honor their contract. And it was a blow, big blow. In fact, we did a company meeting. I said, listen, we just lost several million dollars a year. It's gone. It's not there. And we had 6 or 7 people dedicated to the account, and it was in our business plan for the year. And I said, but here's what we're going to do. to get better. You know, we've got this, and this going on. And we assembled the team and we strategically put together basically an offensive game plan like Andy Reid's doing this weekend. And we attacked. And within 3 weeks, our team rallied and the revenue that was lost. This count at the time was probably 1/8 of our overall revenue. We were back to that within the same month.
Wow.
So we had signed up a couple of customers, but at the same time, our employees started doing that were getting clogged up by this other account, went and took their talent somewhere else within the company. To other accounts, and they did good work for those accounts and got more business because of it.
Yeah, so, go expand other customers.
So that was like really cool. Our record week, and like I said, we do it by the week. Our record week was 3 weeks after they left us unannounced. Like nice. Basically. Wow. So
the short memory thing you mentioned, that's a common reference for athletes, like baseball players. Like you have to have a short memory. Like you made an error in the last inning. You can't go undo that. Right. You have to have that short memory and it's a confidence thing.
Right.
And I think that's important in sales, is that short memory, because it's about forgetting no. And I've said this so many times in sales, I care about 2 4-letter words, sold and next. And that's that short memory. Like forget next.
Can we add cash to that list?
Yeah, that is a subcategory. That is under the parent category of sold. Yeah. Okay. And by the way, there is a third 4-letter word often used in sales that is not always productive, and it starts with an F and ends with a K.
Oh.
But that's part of the forgetting process. Okay. Yeah. So Jeff, I have a question for you. So when you look back and by the way, congrats once again on all the growth, man. I'm proud of you, man. I love seeing people I've known for a lifetime succeed. I love seeing it here in our hometown as well. What's something that you mentioned having a history, you know, working for someone else, and now all of a sudden you're an entrepreneur with Dynamic Logistics. What's one thing that you just clearly didn't even anticipate? Like, what's your real oh shit line?
Well, so you want negative or positive?
Negative.
Negative?
Yeah. It doesn't even have, when I say negative, like everyone we talk to gets into a business and they're like, well, I just didn't even anticipate that that would be a thing.
Yeah, I think.
And like you couldn't have planned for it, anything.
Right. I would say it would be understanding the expense side of the business. Again, mm-hmm. sales guy, right? And, you know, I was also, I'm in charge of the EBIT for the company. It's got to be good every single month, every single quarter. And I didn't realize how closely you've got to watch that. And so we would have months, this is 3-4 years ago. And I'm like, yeah, it's record sales month, finance VP, what do we got for the financials for the month? And she'd come in and I'm like, how the fuck did we lose money? How's that even possible? We just sold our asses off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this and that. And I'm like, oh my God. So that to me was the oh shit. Like, okay, I got to learn this side and learn how to, you know, you talk about sales pipelines, having a Salesforce.com or a Microsoft Dynamics to keep track of what's our top line going to be. You need a financial pipeline of what our costs are going to be.
Yeah.
So we invented some processes and some technologies to track that. So we really almost know at the end of the month, within about a 4 or 5% margin, probably 3 or 5% margin, what our EBIT's going to be like on the 31st or at midnight. So that was the oh shit moment for me. Is like, oh my God, I can't just be focused on growth. I've got to get a handle on expenses. And I will also say we've hired some awesome girls and guys in that department as well. So that would be an oh shit moment for me to have to learn how to do that.
When we're done, can you take us out and buy us lunch?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
What does that have to do with saving money?
I got him to spend some
money. Oh, yeah. Well, right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, hey, Matt. So, Matt.
No, just come. We're having a massive potluck today. Come on over to the office, guys.
As long as it's all keto friendly, because I decided I'm fat and need to lose some weight. Hey, Matt. What's
wrong week for that?
And I haven't really asked you this. Like, what was one of the things with Stackify that you grossly underestimated? I've never asked this here, but like, what's something that really popped and you're like, I don't know, you're what, 6 years into it?
Dude, like eight.
Yeah.
8 years into this.
So what was something there?
My oh shit moment?
Yeah. Or just like something that like you clear, like you went into it expecting X and you're like, wow, I did not even consider that that would be a thing.
I think hardest part for me has been the growth part of it, right? You feel like you're going to build this thing and all of a sudden it's just like you build it and they will come and you will just sell the shit out of it, right? And didn't. And you spent a lot of money on marketing and advertising, still not selling it. And you like go back to the drawing board and you're like, man, I don't have a good market strategy. I don't know how to acquire customers. How do I do this? And then you figure one out and you're like, okay, I can scale this thing. And you're like, I can scale a little bit, but I still don't know how to scale it like 100 times what I want it to be. And then you do some research and you look online, you're like, wow, if I could grow a B2B software company 40 to 60% year over year, that's doing pretty good. I'm like, maybe I need to set my goals a little lower. You know, I'm trying to like grow 10x a year here. It's like, wait a second. I'm trying to kill myself, but really 40 to 60% is really successful. And I think that was part of it is then you realign your budgets and your goals. You're like, you know what, this is a realistic goal. And, you know, based on industry stuff and whatever, like that's really good success. So let's realign our goal on something that's achievable. It's not trying to kill ourselves. We're not trying to grow too fast. We're not burning too much capital, you know, something we can achieve. Right. And, but that's the hardest part when you first start the business. You talk about that first couple of years. You're like, you work so hard. You're trying to build the product and that's painful. You're trying to get your first customers and that's painful. Like all that is so hard and so frustrating, right? Because it doesn't just happen easily and naturally. You have to work really hard at every step of the way. And a lot of people will give up at those steps.
Yeah.
It's really easy to give up. But then you start getting some traction and it's almost more frustrating because you're not getting more traction. Like you're trying to figure out how to speed it up and you can't figure out how to speed it up. And just all of that is very, very frustrating, especially for me, because I'm like, let's go, let's do it. What are we waiting for? Let's go, let's go, let's go. But things just don't move that fast.
I'd like to answer on behalf of the, and from Full Scale, if that was from that perspective. And by the way, for those of you listening, I mean, you just heard some pretty golden insight from two CEOs of companies that rank on lists. We'll just put it that way. And
we're both in the Inc. 500.
Right. And I'm going to answer on behalf of a company that will be on the Inc. 500 at some point. We're not even old enough yet.
Yep.
We're like literally Full Scale, 200 employees in 18 months. And my God, where's the learning curve there? Yeah. So I think one of the things, and Matt, you can attest to this, is owning the company with us. You want to check out what we do, go to fullscale.io. The amount of upfront money needed to do everything we do. I mean, we looked at the learning. Now we've become pretty precise at figuring that out, but the amount of capital that is needed to grow. And then I think the one thing when I look at like the, oh shit. So the first year of the business, we were treating it like our valuation and our ability to attract capital or investors was based on revenue. And we very quickly learned that we were an EBITDA play.
Right.
And so
services-based businesses are different.
Sure. Well, and they can be in some cases, yes, in some cases, no, but then, you know, you kind of have to figure that out firsthand. And we haven't, Matt and I still own the business 50-50 straight down the middle, but we've talked to people about it and, you know, just getting the different opinions on, you know, what's out there and what's important and where you're going. And then, you know, back to that money up front. So like, for example, if we hire 30 new people in a month, which we've done three different months, we're going to spend 50-60 grand just before they even show up and begin to perform services for clients. And that's just on laptops, desks, and chairs. And then
that doesn't include customer acquisition costs and things like that.
No, and that's another thing too. What you meant, basically you were talking about with your oh shit moment was, I think everyone, it is difficult to figure out how much it costs to acquire a customer, right, and how quickly you can do it. And with us, that was always a challenge too, because at first, Full Scale's initial clients were driven so much by our people we knew.
Friends and family.
And then you get to the end of that, mm-hmm, and now you're like, oh, wow. So I got to figure out how to do this stuff. And that's been a process that we've ended up figuring out. But I mean, man, they're like, just the upfront costs and then also dealing with something 4,500 or 8,500 miles away. Well, and dealing with
business partners that are assholes. I mean, that's a big part of it too, man.
Wait a minute.
You have business partners?
I have business partners.
He's pointing that right. Or were you talking about yourself and my point of view, right?
Matt is awesome.
Yeah, I love Matt.
Yeah.
You know what else I love? I love playing Mixtape the Game, and I'm positive that Jeff has not played it before. Have you?
I would like to.
I that's a good attitude. All right, mixtapethegame.com. Mixtape the app, now available on Android and iOS. Go play it. Talk about like oh shit moments when we did the Mixtape the app. We own part of this with our current CMO. And we were announcing it, and it crashed while we were playing it live on the podcast. We left that in there because you got to know people. This isn't easy. All right, so I've pulled a card from the Mixtape deck. And I'm going to read a scenario. We're all going to name a song that we think applies to this scenario. Then we will vote for who the winner is. You may not vote for yourself. The best song for riding a beach cruiser down Venice Beach Boardwalk. I'm going with Today is a Good Day by Ice Cube.
Vanilla Ice.
You're going like
Ice Ice Baby.
You're going Ice Ice Baby.
I mean, it's half the song, right? That's what he's talking about.
Rolling down the... Wait, is that how that goes?
That's a different song. That's Gin and Juice.
You're right.
For whatever reason, I'm thinking
completely different guy.
Macklemore and Thrift Shop.
Ooh, dang. So you got Ice Ice Baby?
Yeah, and I don't even like that song. I like Macklemore a lot better.
You know, Matt, I usually make a habit of not voting for you, but I'm going to today.
All right.
Yeah, so, yeah.
You get a twofer on that.
Sweet.
Who did you vote for? Not that it even matters.
I'm going to go with yours.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask a favor of you because this is a guest. It's a personal friend and someone I've known for a while. Will you give away the firing of the money gun honors to Jeff?
Okay. Fine.
Okay. Hang on. And I just know you're going to want to do this. So hand that over. Jeff, fire away, baby.
Make it rain.
There you go, buddy. I'll
drive the EBITDA.
Yeah, it's up $27. $27. No comments on where these bills have been or where they're going.
Right?
Or where they're going, perhaps. Or anyway, congratulations on kind of winning Mixtape.
So, I
feel like the golden money gun is how long is it going to take you to buy one for your office now? And Neil Sharma, if you happen to be listening, I do still have the money gun that I bought you. I will drop it off someday. First off, Jeff, thanks for taking time out of your busy life to come by and hang out with us. For those of you listening, go to shipdlx.com and you can see all about what they do. If you want to see pictures of us and our beautiful faces, you can go to the Startup Hustle Instagram page. Check us out on YouTube. I'll probably make a TikTok video of Jeff and, maybe with Ice Ice Baby in the background. You can find Dynamic Logistics all over the place. So check them out. We like to end our episodes of Startup Hustle with what we call the Founders Freestyle. We have a tendency to talk about a lot of stuff during the show. You can really say whatever you want, whether it's advice, you can pitch the business, you can do whatever you want. You can sing Ice Ice Baby if you want, but as far as something you'd like to say to all the hustlers listening, what do you got?
Let's talk about what it would take to be successful. I'd rather give advice if I have any.
Sure.
Or some thoughts there. I will tell you this: once you go entrepreneur, and if you do it right, which we all know is not easy, you'll never not want to be one.
I'm That's unemployable. One
Yeah, pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, I'm unemployable.
Yeah,
sure.
Me too. So that's one thing. But you got to be tough. You got to have thick skin. You got to be smart. Write a plan down. Try and execute to it. You're not going to execute to what you planned out, but be pliable, be flexible to practically adjust. And I'll say one thing. You can't have a fucking ego. End of story. You cannot have an ego if you're going to do this, because that's what kills companies, is leaders that – either through insecurity or whatever else, feel like they've always got to be right. Listen to your people. They're the ones dealing with customers and the service providers you work with, and use their advice to make good decisions within the framework of the strategic vision of the company. And understand, you are not going to make money right off the bat. You are not going to be successful right off the bat. So you just got to keep going. You got to keep pushing forward. And like I said, trust in your people, get good people. I think Matt said some earlier, I think Matt Corsi might have said, everything I'd say, make sure your product's good. Developing a good product's a big, important thing. I mean, if you've got something that you can stand behind that looks good and feels good for your customers, you provide value to them, you can answer. A customer is going to pick you for one of three or four reasons. Identify what those reasons are and make sure you're performing to those three or four reasons, because generally the C-level or the vice president level that's going to fire you or keep you around, they're not looking for the minutia. They're trying to find the three or four macro points that you're hitting on. So identify those as well.
Those are the benefits, not the features.
Yeah. What's it do for me? What's it do for me?
WIIFM. It's the world's most popular radio station. You know that? It's a call sign for what's in it for me. Where everyone's tuned in.
I would also add, figure out your comp plans. People don't think about this as much, but if you nail your comp plans, and by that I mean figure out incentives that are very easy to understand, not some sort of, you know, calculus, algebraic calculation on a commission check. Figure out your comp plans to where everyone's incented to work a little bit harder because they know they're going to make more money. We're one of the only companies I know where everyone's on some sort of commission. They have salaries, but they can earn a little bit more money.
Yeah.
And what I do with that, I have 76 people that are doing the work, about 110 people because of that. So,
And that's important. And sometimes too, like, and there's early stages and that is difficult to do.
Yeah.
Cause you just don't know. You just don't know like how that could be affected. I don't like to offer things that I then have to later adjust because it was not well thought out.
Right.
Or whatever. So what do you have, Master Watson?
You know, I want to talk today. I want to reiterate the point about the value of being in Kansas City and playing to its strengths, right? And, you know, you're in the logistics kind of transportation part of this, which I said earlier is boring. I mean, it is kind of infrastructure plumbing. It's super critical to our entire industry. But a lot of people are trying to do like weird, cool, sexy, cute apps, and they have no concept of how they're ever going to make any money. You're solving real world problems. It may not be like super sexy and glamorous, but it's a real world problem. And these companies will pay a lot of money for it because you can save them a lot of money. You can make them more efficient. They're my favorite kind of stuff. Like, I love business to business software and services like this. I love it. I hate anything to do with selling to consumers. So I absolutely love what you do. But I think it's really, you know, about playing to your strengths in Kansas City. Like, there's so many logistical companies and stuff here, and big companies like YRC, Yellow, and Roadway, and Freightquote, and all these different people. And, you know, that's awesome for you to be able to draw on talent from those people, hire from there, which is great. You know, my previous company, Vin Solutions, is here, and it has like 500 employees. Well, Kansas City is sort of a hub for automotive software now because other people see that and like, you know what? There's talent in the town that know that industry, right? And so that's cool that you're here, and you'll continue the legacy of that, right? So it's really cool, and playing to those strengths.
Thank you.
And I'll go ahead and close that. Once again, Jeff Auslander, CEO of Dynamic Logistics, shipdlx.com. You know, I'm actually going to speak to the importance of having strong logistics at your company. I'm often heard saying saving money is making money. That lends to your earlier statement, Jeff, about, you know, having control of the expenses and different stuff. And that can sometimes be hard. There, especially as your business grows, if you don't have strong logistics and just operations and management, and if you're not efficient, the amount of money you start bleeding gets exponentially larger. And not only that, your ability to it can really end up being like a fire hose that's on with no one holding it, just flapping around, just, you know, and that's, I think so many people are focused on sales. Now, that is what you should be focused on, but you also have to, well, what's the cost of that? There's been so much press recently about all these quote unicorn companies that like Uber's an example, like, what's their outlook for actually being profitable? And it might be nothing. And that, you know, that's not sustainable. Like, there are a few companies that can get away with that, but it's probably not yours, people. Like, you can't run your startup or your business like the federal government does and have a $1 trillion deficit. That they come calling. And you know, that particular amount of cash that you're spending, it does matter. It all is relative to what you get to keep, what you get, how you get to grow, and a whole lot of different things. So, you know, whether it's shipping logistics or something different, you know, try to streamline your processes and figure it out. If you recognize you have a problem, it might not always be solvable today, but at least like acknowledge and reckon, hey, this is something we got to get better at. Talk to the people that are there with you and try to figure it out. Speaking of which, I've got a bunch of logistics problems I've got to solve with my podcast host now.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about Jeff. I'm going to slide him over. He likes to talk about sales.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, once again, thanks again, Jeff. We'll see you all next time.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Startup Hustle with Matt DeCourcy and Matt Watson. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit startuphustle.xyz. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and subscribe. And we'll catch you next time on Startup Hustle.